Whether they like it or not, official World Golf Rankings continues to haunt LIV golf players, and now we've got multiple players over on the LIV side who have withdrawn themselves from the qualification for the upcoming Olympics in Paris. This is, you know, it's fairly significant news, and it's a reason why a lot of the guys who may or may not make that move over to LIV, this is the stuff that's got to be on their mind, the guys who want to compete in these other competitions. We're going to talk about why the official World Golf Rankings matter so much for the Olympics in just a second, but we've also seen some other really big news in the past week or so on the LIV side, specifically Dustin Johnson's team, the Four Aces, brought in a heavyweight in the business world as their general manager. So we're going to talk about how that, well, you know, how that reflects on teams and the whole team dynamic and what that's going to mean kind of going forward, what precedent that might set for more teams. But the other, the big thing, the lingering thing that we've got to dig into, of course, is the fact that we are now a week out from the Masters. That is the new additional framework agreement deadline that just continues to be passing by. And we had that meeting with Tiger Woods and the Players Advisory Board in the Bahamas with Yasser. And then nothing happened.
And then nothing happened.
And we've got now one ex-Ryder Cup captain who's been speaking out and basically indicating not the best news for that deal.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to get into. But first, let's get it. Let's talk about this Olympics thing. Because... you know, some of these guys you've heard before, whether it be the Ryder Cup or, you know, any opportunity for players to represent their country, it's something that means a little bit more.
Guys usually jump at it, right? They want to do this.
And
I have a feeling.
We're just rewatching, you know, Netflix and the whole, you know, following along with the Ryder Cup, and you just start to see the emotion and what the guys felt, just feeling like they're playing for their country. I would imagine as Netflix follows this season, the Olympics will be another storyline.
I got to think so, yeah.
And so some of the names here, you know, I think these are guys who I would think would definitely want to represent their country. And they really, playing for LIV, they don't have a vehicle to do that. So some of the big names here are Brooks Koepka.
Right.
Who undoubtedly, you know, would be a great addition. You know, we know how he rises to the occasion in events like this, to the U.S. team. You also have Terrell Hatton. You have Louis Oosthuizen. All of them have pulled their names from the Olympic qualification. And this is largely because, like I said, they just don't have a shot. They would have to, in order to get into the Olympics and qualify, which is coming up in only, what, 5 months, four months? They would have to play outstandingly well in the majors that come before the Olympics. And the reason for this is that effectively the Olympic qualification points mirror the official World Golf Rankings.
Okay.
Right. Now, going back just a couple of weeks ago, we had Greg Norman announcing that LIV was going to no longer pursue official World Golf Rankings. We talked about it here on the podcast, but what he had said was a resolution which protects the accuracy, credibility, and integrity of the official World Golf Rankings no longer exists. And he said, we have made significant efforts to fight for you and ensure your accomplishments are recognized within the existing ranking system. Unfortunately, official World Golf Rankings has shown little willingness to productively work with us. Now, that was a letter that he expressed to the LIV players. But it just shows official World Golf Rankings, and this is the debate that we continue to see, whether they're valid anymore, no matter what you feel about that current state, the reality is its influence across all areas of golf is significant, and this is one more way we see that.
Yeah, I mean, and it shocks me about Brooks, though. I mean, with first major coming up, I mean, I'd like to know what are the exact qualifications, because here's a guy who knows how well he plays at majors. Like, why wouldn't he go for it? Why?
Well, the exact qualifications are this. I mean, the current rules, it's they take the top 15 players in the official World Golf golf rankings are eligible for the Olympics with a limit of four per country.
Okay,
so you go to your country and you just start going down that list and the four top guys.
Yep.
Now, guy like Koepka,
way out of it.
Right, because you think about how many Americans Scheffler, are on that list.
Yeah, got it.
Exactly. He knows in order for him to get to the top four in the official golf rankings, it would need a miracle. Because every week that he's not on PGA Tour, he's losing ground to these other guys.
He'd have to win the first two majors.
Right.
Right, at least.
And still not
necessarily. And still not even.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like I said, as much as ground as you gain when you win a major, the LIV guys are losing ground every single week.
Right.
Now, there are going to be some other countries where maybe there aren't as many players in the official World Golf Rankings, so you may still have a shot being on LIV. Keep in mind, this is an important thing to clarify here, is that the Olympics have not made any claims or disqualifications or suspensions for LIV players. It's not like what we saw with the PGA Tour, with the European Tour. If you're playing on LIV, that does not mean you're automatically suspended. It just effectively means you're not accruing the points that you need to get there.
Right.
You know, very much similar to the way the U.S. Ryder Cup is run, you know. So it's a tough
Olympics
one.
Another asterisk, people are going to say, because the best players in the world aren't competing for their countries. We're going to hear this again.
I think you'll hear, to some extent, this debate forever until we get a resolution. Yeah. And that's why I think we need to continue to work towards some sort of resolution. And I just don't know if we're going to get there. You know, like I said, in a minute, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the recent comments, to kind of indicating that they're not as close as we'd like them to be. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, what stands out the most about this is it's just further evidence of just how fragmented the game has become, you know, as part of this whole split that we've had. And we've said it countless times that the official World Golf Rankings almost has to now find a way.
It does. It's insane just to think about. I'm like, can you imagine the Olympics, Spain not having John Rahm
right
playing for his country? Like, when you think golf in Spain, obviously, if you think about modern day golf, Spain, you think Rahm. So it just blows my mind. It feels like it's just another feather in the in whatever they need to get done. It's just another reason why. Like, the Olympics, guys, is not going to be as great this year, but we have to get something done.
Right.
I just hope it moves the needle for next week.
And the good news for any, you know, Spanish fans is that I think Rahm should still make
probably
because he joined LIV so late and he was so high up in the official World Golf Rankings. Unlike Koepka, who's been playing there for multiple seasons now and has had time to fall down the official World Golf Rankings. But if this is not resolved in 4 years from now, you could very well see Rahm not making the Spanish team.
Exactly.
Right now, I mean, that's where, in a lot of ways, we said Rahm was in the perfect position to make the move, if anybody ever was, because based on his wins, his major wins, he has exemptions for a long time.
Strategically map that out.
Right.
Probably even Olympics.
There's a lot that Rahm doesn't have to worry about.
Right.
And it looks like the Olympics is definitely going to be one of them. But regardless, like I said, it's further evidence of the fragmentation of the game. And it just shows that we've heard from the official World Golf Ranking side that it's not political. They just said they can't quite find a vehicle and a way to rank these guys because their style of play is so different. Then you saw on the LIV side, Norman forcing the hand of, and in a lot of ways, this is where it bubbles to the top, by Norman forcing the hand and saying, we're no longer even asking because it doesn't look like we're getting them. It continues to put the pressure on the official World Golf Rankings to say, figure this out.
Right.
Because it just seems like, and it's become quite obvious at this point that LIV's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it seems that way.
So figuring it out is an important thing. But that's where we stand at the moment. And it's unfortunate to see that, you know, there are going to be certain guys who might otherwise have made it into the Olympics. And there's going to be that certain nationality behind it where you're going to say there are going to be certain, you know, countries and say, I really wish I had this guy there. And you know, we're losing out on meddling opportunities because of this. But as we always say, you guys weigh in the comments below. Let us know. Do you think this is fair? Do you think it's unfair? What are some of the ways that we can kind of get this problem solved? But moving on and talking about how, again, and more further evidence that LIV is not going anywhere, we've got this other big news that Dustin Johnson's team, the Four Aces, there's a degree of this is not a big surprise. I'll tell you why in a second. But they brought in the former Travis Matthews CEO, Chris Rosen, and they're going to bring him in as their general manager.
Okay, big moves.
So I think that one thing that this is a sign of, it almost makes me feel it, kind of like formalizing the team environment like we see in baseball with general managers, basketball, et cetera, et cetera. It just shows that the team aspect of LIV continues to evolve.
Yeah.
This is in a lot of ways where they're now bringing him on for a couple things. They're bringing him on, one, to run the team. And as these teams become bigger and they have more, you know, merchandising, sponsorship deals, things like that, they're going to need someone to run that operation.
Yeah.
And here they're bringing in somebody who has not only extensive industry knowledge, but also industry connections. Mm-hmm. You know, he's somebody, like I said, running, you know, Travis Mathew previously and being in the golf world for a while, sure knows a lot of people, and this is going to help the team kind of expand. But it just shows bringing in a general manager just shows the continued effort to make the teams not just like an afterthought.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt we're going to see a trend. We're going to see some other FOMO out there of, oh, this team's doing it. We need to get into it. We need to get involved. Other teams are going to want a general manager. They're going to be want to move in a different direction. Here's what I'm curious about. These teams, over the last few years of LIV being alive, have won money. They've won money individually, and they won money as teams. These guys, we always thought they chopped them up, the money. Like, let's say the team won $4 million for coming in first place. Each guy got $750, whatever. Bad math, but whatever. So was there, you think there's like a massive corporate kitty for each team, money, someone running that now to pay people like this? Or is this an investment on the player side? Is Pat Perez and these guys going to start ponying up money and be like, we're going to start hiring as a team? I would love to lift the hood of these LIV teams and just see how they're operating. Because I'm curious, because then maybe that'll give us a little more direction on where this thing's going to go.
Right. So you're basically saying where is Chris's salary coming from?
Where's it coming from?
Right. And there's different shares of it. Like, so for example, not every person on a team is a team owner.
Right.
Right. And you have guys like DJ, who's a partial team owner. So you're right. Does he pay part of that salary? It's a great question.
Yeah, curious.
But you know, one thing that the reason, like I said, it wasn't a big surprise is that when Chris had left Travis Mathews, he founded Extracurricular, which is a new apparel, clothing, athleisure, whatever you want to call it, brand. DJ started wearing that in 2023, and then they came on board as the official apparel sponsor of the Four Aces later in that year. I think it was August of last year.
Yeah.
So there's a natural synergy. He's already been working with the team in some capacity, but he is going to be, like I said, tasked with the idea of bringing in additional revenue streams for the team. Sure. And it's a business. It's kind of an open book there. It's not just apparel. There's a lot of ways that a team can make money,
right?
But it really kind of goes back to the original point with LIV, was to kind of get a little bit away from the PIF investment, at least for the team aspect, and start to bring in individual investors.
Right.
Well, the only way you're going to bring in team investors is going to be through showing them the, you know, the ability to generate revenue.
Right.
So whereas
gotta be there.
We've come a long way from the times when no one wanted to touch a LIV team with regards to a sponsorship. All the corporations were worried about the optics of that, to now, you know, new names emerging, and then now starting to bring in some of kind of the old guard when it comes to golf business executives, and how that will reshape and change everything.
Right. I mean, although the eyeballs aren't really on LIV yet, you know, we keep saying yet, we're waiting for, I guess there are LIV fans or LIV backers and supporters that are waiting for the numbers to blow through the roof, blow past the PGA Tour one day. Maybe it will. Maybe it'll take many, many years, but I think it's just going to take time. It's going to take time for these teams to still grow. Like you said, I agree. I don't think LIV is going anywhere. I think it's only going to get stronger.
Yeah, and I think this is where you're going to see that direction where potentially more teams start to treat it more like a business, bring in experienced general managers. I would not be in the slightest bit surprised if you started to see even, you know, a cross sports jump, like somebody coming from a general manager who's been working in a different sport, baseball, something right. like that, and coming in, because at the end of the day, you know, golf, this is just still so new to golf. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This is the first real time we've had, you know, at the highest level, teams being involved.
Yeah, right.
So there almost isn't a precedent for that, for a general manager of a golf team. Mm-hmm. It's almost a new position that's being generated, but undeniably, this is something that I think will start to trickle throughout the league, and you'll start to see that. And I think as you get these guys who've been inside of the sport and inside of the business operations side, getting more involved with LIV, that's when I start to see more of those doors start to open, and LIV becomes more viable long term.
Right. And you can't rule out that these guys have individual massive followings. So although LIV Jeddah on a Friday may get 200,000 views, Bryson can get 1 million views from his social media. So like they individually have the eyeballs. So they're marketable.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think it's an open book to the ways that you could generate revenue.
Absolutely.
You could take the team and Who knows? You could do appearance fees with the team. Exactly. There's a million things you could do. This is where a smart businessman is going to come up with those ideas.
Right. Because all these people out there saying, like, I don't know why these brands are going to be jumping on. Nobody's watching LIV.
Unless yeah, but you know what? That. The reality is every time we say this here on the show that nobody's watching LIV, undoubtedly we get a million comments. And I have to agree with a lot of them. The fact is it's not cleanly quantifiable.
Exactly.
There is a lot, although for us here in the States, it's not the easiest thing always to watch.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Aside from the app, when I say easiest, I mean, if you're you in your usual,
what we're used to.
Right. Your usual rhythm is to turn on the TV
remote
on Sunday.
Control, channel
right.
Two. Yeah.
So the issue with the CW and where it's broadcast and where it's not, I get it. But the reality is you have, you know, you can stream it through the app. You've got now, you know, overseas, especially where LIV has really had its biggest growth is internationally. There's a lot more viewing options. Mm-hmm. And you can make the case even on the other side. We saw recently a number of headlines with the PGA Tour hurting for rankings, for, you know, ratings, I should say, with some of their recent events. So I think that too is another, it's a hard to quantify market because it's not just where you could just say, what are the Nielsen ratings on something? Mm-hmm. Because nowadays people just don't tune in the same way.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of a slow but steady growth in viewership.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of it, you got to go back to what you've heard from the mouth of Greg Norman, from Phil Mickelson, saying this is not something to expect to be an overnight success. It's a startup, right, and it's going to take time for people and fans to slowly grow their investment into players and teams.
Do you think over the last 4 or 5 weeks, the news headlines have been PGA Tour ratings have been worst ever, declining, dropping? We've been seeing it everywhere. You think that's good for LIV or is it bad for the entire sport in general?
I would file that under bad for the whole sport. I think in general, I think the continued rivalry between these two, you could file under bad for the sport. I think anything that we've said this before, you and I are very active viewers of golf. We're going to watch it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about the casual viewers. I worry about the people who are put off by not knowing where their favorite players are playing that week, not understanding the events. Even on the PGA Tour side, we've had dramatic changes in the names of the events because you have sponsors who are dropping out because they can't afford the new signature events. It just feels like every week you're playing catch up. Mm-hmm. Whereas before there was a rhythm to it. You kind of knew that this week was this event.
Yep.
The guys were, now it's in and out. And I worry more so about how that, the TV set, so to speak, being turned off or not being tuned into because people are like, there's too much going on here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a certain degree that the drama brings some eyeballs, but long-term sustainability, I think that's why, going back to what we said before, you gotta get this resolved. We got to stop fragmenting the game. We got to find a way that we can level the playing field with a ranking system that we know who the true top players in the world are. There's no more speculation. It becomes very simple and clear.
I guess that's why we all can't wait for the majors, because it's the only real unified version of the sport.
Yes. And even that, you could debate, is not fully unified, because there are guys who are going to miss out on the majors.
That should be there.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot going on here. But I also want to get into this interview with the ex-Ryder Cup captain.
Yeah.
And what he said indicated where he felt like this is just not, as much as we have high hopes for this to happen and you know, us to get these together in some sort of agreement, he's saying we're further off than we think, and I'll tell you exactly why he thinks that in just a second, but let's do a quick word from our sponsors. All right, guys, we all know that nothing can sharpen your short game more than a fresh set of grooves, especially if those grooves are spin milled into the new Vokey design SM10 wedges. Bob Vokey and his team, they're always grinding, and the work really shows in the SM10. They're already a favorite among the best wedge players in the world. And the SM10, the reason why it's been so successful, it's designed around the three keys to a great wedge play. You've got shot versatility, you've got distance and trajectory control, and you've got maximum spin. All of which we got to experience firsthand in our recent fitting. I actually have just sitting over there the box. My wedges just arrived.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't torn into them yet.
I just showed up this morning. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, that's where, when you get into the fitting, is when you really see it. And you see that there's such a diverse amount of bounce and grind options. And then when you bring in shaft options and everything that you get in a really great fitting, the sky is the limit of how you can get fit. And I think one of my favorite things that the fitter told me was that no matter which bounce and grind you end up in, He goes, there's somewhere there, you know, there's a former either PGA Tour or major champion who's played that combination. Yeah. And it just shows how it's not that there's one that's perfect for everyone, but it's really the diversity in that grouping that you can find something that fits you perfectly. So get better wedges, become a better player with Vokey Design SM10 wedges. Go to Vokey.com to sharpen your short game with the SM10 and find a fitter near you.
And the all-new FootJoy Pro SLX are engineered with the Power Track system. These shoes are incredible. They have the 3D wing that they're designed for swing stability. We got to test these out. I mean, I used them at Stream Song just last week. I love the way they feel. I love the way they look. I always get nervous with a new pair of shoes, Frank, that they're just going to be tight and they're going to just be like hugging my foot too much, especially a new pair when you get on a golf trip.
I wore mine for my Vokey fitting.
That's right. You wore them at the fitting. Yeah. And let me tell you something. You totally proved me wrong. They were super comfortable. And the best part is that 3DX wing. I mean, it effectively manages lateral and upper movement. I did feel it out on the course. I mean, you don't think about shoes being an important part of your golf equipment out there, and you got to think that way. Great stuff about it. Colorways it comes in, they're really unique patterns. The blue, the yellow, they just pop out there. People are going to be asking you, hey, where'd you get those shoes? So go check out the entire lineup at footjoy.com. All right, and huge thanks to Golf Zone Social. It's the most social experience in golf. Easily one of the coolest places to hang out.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, we've done so many fun events there over the last couple of years. And, you know, located over here in the tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, you know, the place is just magnificent. It's full bar, food, but here's the best part. The most realistic indoor golf experience.
Hands down.
Right?
Undebatable.
I mean, you've seen this thing. The Golf Zone technology, it's the most realistic. It's got the floorboards that move. You got TVs on the wall. It's just a really cool place. They have golf leagues. My kids love it there, you know, anytime I bring them, because they have the fun games on their technology of knocking the blocks with the golf clubs. Super fun. So you guys have to check out. If you're in the area, go visit a Golf Zone Social. But here's the cool part. You can come visit one by just coming to one of our meetups. Our first one, in fact, is next week.
Yes.
We're doing Masters Friday, April 12th at 4:30, like at happy hour, 4:30 to about 7:30, Scarsdale, New York in Westchester. So if you work or live in this area, Rockland County, Westchester, Connecticut, come on down, come hang out with us. Long drive, close to the pin, prizes.
Prizes, we're bringing prizes.
It's going to be some great stuff. We want to meet you. We want to hang with you. Come on down. We'll see you there.
All right. So kind of rewinding, it was just a couple weeks ago, you know, it was like the first big thing that we could all kind of grasp onto. The players, and we talked about it here on the podcast, the PGA Tour Players Advisory Board. We had Tiger Woods was there. Jay Monahan was there. Finally meeting with Yasser, the PIF. And we all talked about, hey, it seems like, why did it take so long? Why so many years? It showed us how far behind we are in some sort of an agreement. But from the little bit that trickled out of it, it seemed very positive. There's a few notes on social media of how, you know, players kind of mentioning that they felt comfortable with Yasser. They felt like he was invested in the game, and it felt like it could be a good clicking, you know, there between the two, where you could bring in some more of that PIF investment. Might this mean something with, you know, dropping the suspension for LIV players? Who knows? But then all of a sudden, everything just kind of went silent and cold.
Yep.
And now we're creeping up on the Masters and no announcement, nothing formal, nothing any more than that. And you really thought if that was kind of the last kind of little bit, that more formal meet and greet to where we can really start the negotiations going, mm-hmm. then we'd have more information by now.
Yeah.
So
sure.
It's comes as no real surprise when you hear a little bit more pessimistically. They were speaking to, it was a recent interview with Paul McGinley. So he's the ex-Ryder Cup captain. And they were asking him, like, you know, anybody basically who's close to it and close to what's going on, you know, what information do you have to give to us? Are we getting closer? And in his response and his answer was, don't hold your breath. He said, I think both parties are still wide away from each other in terms of where the common ground is. And then he continued, he went on to say, it could be a few more years before we see any kind of daylight, unfortunately. Remember, what makes this so difficult is that the PGA Tour is a members organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so true. You know, we think of it on the PIF side. It's run by a couple of executives. There are people who are going to make those decisions, and then the players kind of have to follow along. But the trouble here is that with the PGA Tour being a members organization, you've got to get a lot of people kind of all aiming in the same direction.
Right.
And I think that the biggest harm to that so far has just been, and from what we've seen, you know, through the past almost 2 years now, is how in the dark so many players are. Remember, mm-hmm. the PGA Tour is a big organization. There's a lot of players. And what did we see? Remember, we saw the, was it an open letter or some sort of petition that the players have put together, you know, basically saying we want more information, yeah. like asking for more information, to what we all saw very publicly, whether it was in Netflix Full Swing or whatever, the broadsided by the information and just kind of being in the dark. I mean, it's crazy for us to hear players who are part of this organization to say, I'm hearing about something the same way you are from social media. Mm-hmm. And I think that has brought us further and further from the ability to get everybody on board. So it just kind of really leaves everyone scratching their head, like, where do we go from here?
Yeah, curious. I mean, with next week, I mean, maybe there'll be a nice bomb drop next week, you know, give the Masters press conferences a little something extra to it.
Well, that's what we can hope. But like I said, from hearing this statement from Paul,
just give us something, though. Give us like an idea of what you're working towards. What are some of the things that some of the people are agreeing on? Give us a little bit of the framework.
And because that's not being said, it makes me wonder if there is anything.
Yeah.
Right. Or if we're in a complete stalemate, and that's because some people are in the dark. Kind of going on that, what Paul had said is, he said, trying to get a consensus, talking about among the PGA Tour players, to move forward is incredibly difficult. And that's just what it is. Like, when you have too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, so to speak, mm-hmm. how do you get an organization this big to all kind of go into one direction or reach some sort of common ground? And the only way that I can think that that could possibly happen at some point is with some sort of leadership, mm-hmm. leadership stepping up. And this is the concern that so many have expressed, of whether Jay Monahan might be time for him to go and get some new leadership in. Because the only way, and then you think about any big organization with lots of stakeholders, so to speak, the only way to really get that, so it's not completely fragmented and everybody wants something different, is through strong leadership. Sure. So whether it be Jay, or whether we see Tiger Woods, Patrick Cantlay, someone I think needs to, and maybe they're doing this behind the scenes, but that's the trouble. Like, we're not privy to it at all. And we can only speculate that it's not happening because these deadlines keep coming and going.
Right.
But to me, it seems like one of them needs to take the lead on educating the players, educating them on what the talks have been about, making some sort of decision of what direction you want, and then sell that decision to the players mm-hmm. and get them on board. That's leadership.
Yeah.
That's what someone seems to. Totally. But for right now, when you have people who largely can't seemingly even make a decision because they don't have all the information, mm-hmm. that just tells me, yeah, how is it going to ever happen?
Yeah.
Right?
I know.
So
it's unfortunate, but
it is. And again, these are just things that, like I said, just hearing this and seeing this, it's not what you want to be hearing or seeing if you're hoping for a resolution anytime soon.
Right.
And I think what we have is a number of players who, like I said, either are still in the dark and don't have enough, doesn't have enough information to make a proper decision, or have effectively given up. Mm-hmm. You know, I look right at Rory. Here's a guy who fought and stuck his neck out, and then he said he felt like a sacrificial lamb, and now just stepped away from it because of the chaos.
Took a lot of heat from that, man.
So it really just feels like, to me, the only way that we're going to get any closer, and I really hope that this whole you know, take from Paul McKinley is wrong, and we are surprised this week with something. But being in this 11th hour once again, I don't have high hopes for it.
I don't either.
I just wonder if, like, this is where it really boils down to, is that just chaos and no one knows, you know, really which direction we're headed.
And it was only 2 weeks ago that Peter Malnati, another guy in the player advisory board, was pressed at Innisbrook about this. He gave a very political answer.
Yeah.
You know, to the state of golf. It almost seems like he didn't know anything. He just came out of that Bahamas meeting himself.
Right.
So you're right. I mean, I don't think there's going to be much that's going to come out, but I know Tiger, Cantlay, you know, all the guys at Augusta, they're going to be, even LIV guys are going to get pressed.
Yeah.
By the press. Like, what's up?
And
where are we at?
What have we proved in kind of this whole episode talking about this, was that A, fragmentation is still hurting the game, yep. i.e., what we saw in the Olympics. B, Liv continues that they're not going anywhere, making these investments, bringing in general managers, continuing in that direction where they're making themselves sustainable in any way that they can with or without the official World Golf rankings. And then C is like, just all we have is surrounded by speculation because there's nobody coming through. Like you get to a certain point where, you know, you feel like good kind of crisis management. And I think golf is in that. Golf is in a crisis moment. The way through that is to communicate.
Yeah.
Even if that's admitting the things you don't know in the moment. I would much rather see where we're in a state where we're having weekly updates in some way. Jay, somebody, hold press conferences. Admit what you do and don't know.
Yeah, totally.
But get people more involved in the discussion and allow people to understand like what's really going on. Because I think as a lot of the players are sitting in similar seats to us, they're players in the organization. They don't know what's going on.
Right.
And until we right that ship, we're going to end up with this continued limbo.
And if the PGA Tour keeps trending in this direction and the kids out there who are coming into the game of golf at age 12, 13, 14, there's a chance that they may never know what the PGA Tour is, as sad as this sounds, because they're not watching it or their parents aren't watching it anymore. And the only thing they might know, this might be the long game for Liv. The only thing they know is Liv, right, kids? So maybe Liv's long game is to go after this such young market. You come up in the world and like, Scottie Scheffler, who? Like, I didn't know these people because I didn't watch this. PGA Tour started to get lame, is what people are calling it, when I was young. Maybe these 13-year-olds now, when they're 18, Liv is the dominant tour because it just grabbed all this young demographic. I don't know what their long game is, but I could tell you right now from what we see out there is that we see those ratings on PGA Tour dropping still. Liv, I don't see it going this way yet, but eventually it's going to, and there's going to be a point where, like, who's the better tour? Someone's going to be the much better tour. And that's what they have to figure that out.
Yeah, I just wish it could get to a point where it's not this constant rivalry and it's a coexisting.
I just don't think they're ever going to come together. I mean, I think they're going to have to find a way to live separately, unfortunately. And I don't know. I want them to. I'm sure we want them to because enough is enough already.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Even if the answer is that they find a way to operate separately, at least can we do it in a way that has less question marks around it. We know the rules of engagement, so to speak, and we find a way to equitably rank these players so we don't have situations like we have this with the Olympics, because I think that's a shame.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Anyway, that's everything we have for you guys this week. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll keep a close eye on this. Masters Week is coming up, so stay tuned for that.